Vince's folks' house was a neat little white frame structure on a side street. A cottonwood stood next to it, and there was a little flower bed in front of the porch with a few green sprouts in it. Several cars and buggies were parked on the edge of the street in front of the house. All the windows were lit up. We left our horses in the alley next to the house and went up the steps onto the porch, holding our hats. The man who answered the door was a stranger. He wore a sober, dark suit and had a bald head and a white walrus mustache.
Yes?
We're friends of Vince's. I own the fishhook spread where he works.
So you're Jim Strickland. I've heard Vince's folks speak of you. John Hamilton. I'm a friend of the family. Come on in.
John Hamilton took us into a crowded parlor. The air was thick with grief and bay rum and perfume from all the visitors. Vince sat in an armchair that had been pulled over next to the end of a sofa. A slender, middle-aged woman with gray and brown hair sat on that sofa, occasionally dabbing at her eyes with the lacy handkerchief she held. From time to time, she reached over and squeezed Vince's arm. His face looked like it had been carved out of granite, and he didn't respond to the comforting touch of the woman I took to be his mother. Hamilton introduced me to some of the other people in the room, but I don't remember their names. I introduced Enoch, Gabe, and Randy. Bert seemed to know just about everybody already, which wasn't surprising, considering that he and Vince had been best friends for a long time. Bert's folks were there, I think. I don't do too well with mourning. Things all sort of run together on me. Eventually, though, I found myself shaking the hand of Vince's mother.
I sure am sorry for your loss, ma'am. You have my deepest sympathy.
Thank you, Mr. Strickland. I'm glad to know that my son has such good friends to stand with him at this time of trouble.
Yes, ma'am. Anything we can do to help. Don't you hesitate to call on us.
The other fellas shook her hand as well. Enoch and Gabe with the grave gallantry that men of their generation could summon up. Randy somewhat more awkwardly. Bert leaned over and gave her a hug.
I'm so sorry, Mrs. Porter. I can't hardly believe that Mr. Porter is gone.
None of us can, Bert. It's all just so shocking and terrible.
I wanted to ask Vince how he was doing, but it didn't seem like the right time. Anyway, what could his answer be? Of course he wasn't doing any good. The five of us drew off into a corner to stand together.
Maybe we better leave. We done paid our respects. Ain't nothing else we can do here.
Gabe was right about that. I figured we'd spend the night in town and stay for the funeral if it was going to be the next day. I looked around for John Hamilton, the man who'd let us in, and I spotted him across the room.
I'll go ask Mr. Hamilton if they know yet when the service will be.
I was making my way through the crowd when folks started to shuffle aside from three men who had just come in. I didn't recognize any of them. They were all middle-aged, one tall and spare, the other two paunchy. The two paunchy ones wore suits that probably cost more than what most of the other men in the room earned in a year. They went up to Mrs. Porter and Vince. The tall one shook hands with Vince, then took Mrs. Porter's right hand in both of his.
I just want you to know how sorry I am about this, Helen. If there was any way to bring Bob back, I would. I surely would.
Thank you, Mr. Rutledge.
Rutledge let go of her hand and half turned a gesture at the two men with him.
This is Mr. Kennedy and Mr. Milton. They're executives with the railroad.
The one called Kennedy took his hat off, revealing slick down black hair. He looked like he ought to be tending bar somewhere, not running a railroad.
You and your son have our condolences, ma'am. Your husband was a fine railroad man.
I had a feeling Kennedy hadn't known Bob Porter, or anything about what sort of railroad man Porter was. He was just there to express the line's sympathy. The other man, Milton, was more of the same, only with thinning fair hair. I didn't like either of them. I knew their sort just by looking at them. Snake oil salesman, I thought. I eased on over beside John Hamilton.
Who's that fella Rutledge?
Station master here in town. Kennedy's the railroad's regional superintendent. and Milton's his assistant.
You sound like you don't like him very much.
I'm a railroader, too. Chet Rutledge isn't a bad sort for a station master, I suppose. He has to do what they tell him. Kennedy and Milton just sit in their fancy offices and try to figure out new ways to make things harder for the men who actually make sure the trains run on time, the freight gets loaded, and the passengers are taken care of. They squeeze every nickel, every drop of sweat and blood out of us, every chance they get.
There was a good reason my instincts had told me I didn't like those two.
When the sheriff brought the bad news out to the ranch and told Vince, he said something about the brakes on the engine giving out before it bumped that car.
That's what happened, all right. But you won't find anybody who'll admit it now. When talk about a brake failure started going around the yard, Rutledge clamped down on that right away. Clamped down hard. If you ask Pete Abercrombie, the man who was in that engine, what happened, he'll tell you he hit the throttle by accident. Huh! As if Abercrombie would ever do that. He's been around engines, man and boy, for more than 30 years.
Well, everybody makes mistakes sometimes.
Oh, maybe so. But this wasn't one of those times. It was brake failure, all right. And I can tell you why it happened. Kennedy and Milton pushed those engines too hard, just like they do the people who work for them. The engines need to be brought into the roundhouse a couple of times a year to have the brakes worked over and everything else checked out. But that takes them out of service. And the line won't allow that as long as they're running.
Sounds to me like you're saying the line's to blame for what happened to Vince's dad.
That's exactly what I'm saying. Yeah. But I'm the only one who'll still admit that. Rutledge shut everybody up until he could wire Kennedy in San Antonio and find out what to do. Kennedy gave him his orders over the telegraph and then came out here as fast as he could to make sure they were carried out. Anybody who wants to hang on to his job with the railroad had best toe the company line on this. That's why Pete Abercrombie's taking all the blame now. It'll hurt his reputation as an engineer, of course, but at least he'll still have a job. All that happened after Sheriff Lester set off to carry the bad news to the boy, I reckon. That's why I said what he did about the brakes. He didn't know what was going on here in town.
What about now? Won't Lester know something happened when he hears folks saying there was no brake failure?
How's he gonna know any better? He's the sheriff, not a railroader. Abercrombie was right there. Lester will take his word for it, especially when everybody else who was in the yard backs him up.
Yeah. You're telling the truth, though. Aren't you worried about losing your job?
I would be if I gave a damn. Doc says I got something wrong in my gut. All I know is it hurts like hell most of the time. I'll be dead in 6 months, he says. So what can the railroad do to me?
Sorry.
Save your sympathy for the widow and Vince. I'm an old bachelor. Nobody will be left behind to mourn me. And that's the way I like it. Whatever mark I make on the world, I'll make it while I'm here. And once I'm gone, I won't give a good goddamn.
You figure on stirring up trouble for the line over the way they're lying about what happened?
Nah, and I'll tell you why. Helen Porter's got some money coming from Bob's pension. And there's a good chance the line will give her even more than that, just to keep things looking good. Me raising a big stink would just slow things down and maybe even put all that in jeopardy. I won't risk that. Money won't bring Bob back, but neither will causing a fuss. Besides, I'd be just one lone voice crying out in the wilderness, as they say. Wouldn't do a damn bit of good.
Probably not. I came over here to ask you if you know when Mr. Porter's funeral will be.
2 o'clock tomorrow afternoon at the Baptist Church. You're not gonna tell anybody what I said about the accident, are you, Mr. Strickland?
No point in me saying anything. I'm no railroad man. I was 30 miles away when it happened to boot. I don't know anything for a fact.
I'm obliged to you. I don't know what made me run off at the mouth that way.
Folks say I'm easy to talk to. I rejoined the rest of my bunch.
You and that fella palavered for a long time, considering that you just went to ask him when the funeral was.
And I found out, too. 2 o'clock tomorrow.
You plan on us staying in town for it?
That's right.
I was sure Chet Rutledge would show up for the service, since he'd been Porter's local boss. But I hoped that Kennedy and Milton would have the decency to stay away, now that they'd paid their respects to the widow. If I had to look at their faces again while everybody was mourning the loss of a man who died because of their penny pension, I wasn't sure what I would do. But there was a good chance it wouldn't be pretty. One of the things I hate most is a funeral. The music, the preaching, the praying, the crying, all of it gives me the fantods and always has. And no man gets to be the age I am without going to a hell of a lot of them. Bob Porter's funeral was no different. The Baptist church was almost full. Vince, wearing the same suit he'd had on the night before, sat up front with his mother, of course. Me and the rest of the fellas from the fishhook stayed in the back, on the last pew, in fact. Because getting pinned between those two freight cars had mashed Porter so bad, the casket was closed, and nobody had to go through the ritual of walking by slowly and gazing at the dearly departed, which always struck me as just downright morbid. I don't know about you, but I don't want somebody's last memory of me to be what I looked like when I was dead. When it was over, we walked out into the cemetery behind the church for a graveside service, which was even worse than the goings-on inside. The preacher finally wrapped that up and folks started to leave. The gravediggers stood under the shade of a scrawny tree, leaning on their shovels and waiting until everybody was gone to start filling up the hole. As the gravediggers started shoveling dirt back into the open grave, Vince came over to me.
I'll be coming back to the ranch with you and the rest of the fellas if that's all right with you, Mr. Strickland.
You sure you want to do that, Vince? I figured you'd probably stay here in town so you could help your mom.
Mr. Rutledge offered me a job as a baggage handler. Told me I might be able to work my way up to ticket clerk one of these days. But I don't want to work for the railroad, Mr. Strickland. I'm a cowboy now. That's my job.
I don't mind you coming back to the ranch, but I'm not sure it's a good idea for you to leave your mother alone at a time like this.
I already talked to her about it. She says it's fine. She has plenty of friends here in town who will help her out anytime she needs it. And she'll be getting the money from my dad's pension pretty soon. Whatever wages you pay me, I'll send them to her. I don't need any money.
Are you sure about this, son?
Certain sure, Mr. Strickland. As soon as I get out of this monkey suit and back into my regular duds, I'll ride on back with you and the boys, if that's all right.
Of course it's all right. We'll be darn glad to have you back.
We got back to the ranch late that night, and everybody was up early the next morning, going about their work. In fact, I drove the whole bunch of us pretty hard for the next few days, myself included. Staying busy was the best thing in the world for Vince right then, I figured. And not only that, it was getting a lot of work done around the place. 4 or 5 days had gone by when John Hamilton showed up. I stepped out of the barn where Enoch and I had been doing some horseshoeing, and I shaded my eyes with a hand as I peered toward a buggy rolling toward the buildings from the direction of Largo. When it came closer, I recognized Hamilton's big white mustache.
That's a fella you talked to for so long at Vince's mama's house, ain't it?
Yeah. Wonder what he wants.
Hamilton brought the buggy to a halt in front of the barn and climbed down.
Howdy, Mr. Hamilton. What brings you out here?
I need to talk to the boy.
Well, you mean Vince?
Yeah, that's right.
Last time somebody showed up and wanted to talk to Vince, they weren't delivering good news.
Neither am I.
Hamilton winced and caught hold of the buggy to steady himself.
You all right?
This damn gut rot of mine is acting up. That 6 months the doc gave me might have been optimistic. But that's not why I'm here. Something's happened that Vince needs to know about.
Something happened to his mom?
No, she's all right. Physically.
You better go ahead and tell me what this is about, Mr. Hamilton.
I'm not sure it's really any of your business.
That red-headed sprout's our friend, mister. I reckon that makes it our business.
Well, I don't suppose it really makes any difference. Vince would tell Bert, and Bert Chadwick never kept a secret in his life. That boy's face reads just like a book.
You were about to tell us what happened.
Yeah. Well, Chet Rutledge came to see Helen Porter yesterday morning.
He'd had word from the regional office in San Antonio about Bob's pension.
And they're fixing to pay it?
Hell no. According to Kennedy and Milton, Bob barred on what he had coming and never paid it back. There's nothing left. They're not going to pay her one thin dime. It's a damn lie. Bob Porter wasn't a borrowing man. They faked up some paper and made it look like he signed it. But it's a lie. Yeah.
The railroad's not giving her anything.
Not a thing.
Not even something for them being at fault for his death?
But they weren't at fault. According to the official report, it was an accident. As soon as I found out about it, I hitched up my buggy and came here to tell Vince. Made it to Largo yesterday afternoon and spent the night there last night. Figured the boy had a right to know.
Yeah, he does. Enoch, can you ride out on the range, find Vince and the other boys? Tell him to come back in.
Sure. You want me to let Vince know what's happened?
No, I'll tell him. Unless you'd rather, Mr. Hamilton.
No, that's all right. I don't suppose it really matters who tells him as long as he knows. I'd just as soon get back home. I've never had any fanciful notions about dying with my boots on. I'd rather be in my own bed.
You're welcome to spend the night here if you want.
No, thanks. I'll be going.
Mr. Hamilton, I need to ask you one more question.
All right.
Are you absolutely sure there's no truth to what Kennedy and Milton are claiming about the money coming to Mrs. Porter? They'd really do that. Cheat a widow woman out of what's got to be a piddling amount to the likes of them.
I swear on what's left of my life, Strickland. That's what they're doing.
All right, then. Thank you for making the trip out here. It couldn't have been easy for you.
Not much in life is easy. But as long as we're here, there are things that have to be done.
Yes, sir. There sure are.
I called everybody into the house before I told Vince what it was about. Like Hamilton had said, Vince didn't have any secrets from Bert, and Bert didn't have any secrets from anybody. Besides, with what I had in mind, they all had to know about it sooner or later.
No, they can't! Damn it! Shit, those bastards! Those stinking polecats! Damn their hides! Why?
You mean, why would Kennedy and Milton do such a rotten thing?
Yeah, it's not even their money. It's the railroad's money, and the railroad would never miss it.
Some fellas are like that, Vince. They're just naturally greedy, and it slops over into their jobs. You can bet that Kennedy and Milton are raking off plenty for themselves. They want to make as much money as they can for the railroad, so they'll stay in position to do that.
Well, it's not right.
No, son, it sure ain't. That's why
I was a mite annoyed getting interrupted like that, but I figured I'd better see what had them all worked up. When I went to the door and looked out, I saw three riders coming toward the ranch house. The easy way they sat in their saddles and the wide-brimmed, high-crowned sombreros they wore told me who they were.
Santiago and his cousins are here.
I wasn't sure why they had shown up today. We hadn't seen them since the roundup and the drive into town. They were all as solemn as usual when they came in. Santiago nodded a greeting to us.
Vince, we have heard what happened. We are very sorry, amigo.
You mean you know about my dad getting killed?
See, and about the evil thing being done by the men he worked for.
How'd you know about that? John Hamilton just came up from the county seat and told us about it today.
Yes, but Senor Hamilton spent last night in Largo, and he was so angry by what the railroad is doing that he spoke to people about it. We rode to Largo this morning, and while we were there, we heard the talk. Many people are angry at the railroad.
Well, it's not really the railroad. It's Mr. Kennedy and Mr. Milton.
Same thing, as far as most folks are concerned.
I'm glad you and your cousins are here, Santiago. Saves me the trouble of having to ride over to your rancho and talk to you. I plan to ask you to be part of this, too.
Part of what, Senor Strickland?
We got to do something about this. Too many times, folks see something wrong and they just shake their heads and cluck their tongues and say, ain't that a shame? But there's nothing they can do. Well, I'm not put together that way. When the good Lord made me, he didn't put in the part that stands aside and does nothing.
Are we getting to an answer to Santiago's question pretty soon?
Yeah,
We are. Vince and his ma have money coming from the railroad. And if the railroad won't give it to them, that just leaves us with one thing to do. We take it.
What do you mean, take it, Mr. Strickland?
When a fella talks about taking something away from the railroad, it usually means a holdup.
That's right. If Kennedy and Milton don't want to do the right thing, we'll just do it for them.
But we're not outlaws. We wouldn't have any idea how to go about robbing a train.
We'll figure it out. But nobody has to be mixed up in this if they don't want to. If any of you want to steer clear of it, nobody will think any less of you.
Well, I'm glad you said that, Mr. Strickland, because I don't want any part of it.
That's fine. Anybody else?
Gabe and me are in. No offense, Jim, but ranch work ain't near as exciting as robbing trains.
Speak for yourself, you old string bean. Maybe I don't want to do something that'll get the law after me.
Didn't mean to speak out of turn. Are you in, Gabe?
Darn tootin'. Just wanted to make up my own mind, that's all.
My cousins and I, we wish to be part of this effort as well, Senor Strickland.
Is that right? Both Javier and Fernando nodded solemnly. They can talk, can't they?
Get a bottle of mezcal in them, and you cannot shut them up.
I turned to Vince and Bert. All right. That leaves you two fellas.
No, it doesn't. Nobody's going out and holding up a train on my account. Y'all just get yourselves killed, and I won't have it. I just went to my dad's funeral. That's enough for a while.
Nobody's gonna get killed. As long as we're careful and figure out everything beforehand, we'll be fine. And you and your ma will get what's coming to you, Vince.
It's too dangerous.
Well, why don't you just let us work out a plan first, and then you can see if you still feel that way. It won't hurt anything for some of us to take a ride down to Cougar Pass and have a look around.
That's where you plan on hitting the train?
I don't know yet. It's a starting point, though. We'll have to look around, see if we can find a better place.
Aren't any of you listening? I said no! I won't let you do this!
No offense, son, but I don't reckon it's up to you. If we want to hold up a train, we will. And if we want to hand over the loot to you and your ma, we'll do that too.
I won't take it! And when I tell her where you got it, neither will she! You're all crazy!
Vince turned and paced over to the window. As he stood there with his back to us, staring through the glass, I saw his shoulders trembling just a little. I knew the emotions that had to be raging inside him. Sure, he wanted vengeance on the men who cheated him and his mother, and this was one way to get it. But at the same time, Vince didn't want to see any of his friends get hurt or killed.
I think we should do what Mr. Strickland says.
You want to be a train robber? An outlaw? You?
Well, why not? The railroad's done wrong by you and your mother, Vince. You should have gotten that pension money and more besides. Also, there's something you don't know.
What? What is there I don't know about this whole thing, Bert?
You don't know what Mr. Rutledge has been saying about your pa.
What's Rutledge been saying?
It was when he talked to me in town. He said I could come back to work as a baggage handler, too. He thought maybe if I took the job, so would you. And he wanted to do something to help you out, even though it was really your dad's own fault, what happened to him.
How in the hell does he figure that? Pete Abercrombie hit the throttle when he shouldn't have.
Well, Mr. Rutledge told me that wasn't really what happened. He claims your dad had time to get out of the way of that freight car, but he'd been drinking and didn't see it because of that.
Rutledge said my dad was drunk?
Yes, he did.
It's a damn lie. I saw my dad drink a beer every now and then, but he wasn't a drunk. He never would have gone to work drunk. He was too dedicated to his job. Too dedicated to the railroad. And now the men who run it are turning their backs on him.
I didn't want to tell you, Vince, but that's why I've got to go along with Mr. Strickland on this. If there's some way we can make them pay, we've got to do it.
I think you're right. If you got a plan, sir, I won't try to stop you. And I'm in all the way.
Glad to hear it, son. I don't have a plan yet, but I will. I can promise you that.
I'm sorry, Vince. I still can't go along with it.
That's all right, Randy. I don't blame you a bit. Anyway, Mr. Strickland's gonna need somebody to stay here and keep an eye on the ranch. Isn't that right, sir?
It sure is. Tell you the truth, Randy, I feel better about things knowing somebody's here.
All right, then. Guess I can wish you luck in good conscience. You're all my friends, after all.
And I expect we'll need all the luck we can get. I brought the two youngsters and Enoch with me to scout out the lay of the land. Randy and Gabe were holding down the fort back at the ranch. Santiago and his cousins went back to their little spread, but would rejoin us later. When I got a first-hand look at Cougar Pass, I realized just how dumb Steve Tate had been. It was a terrible place for a holdup. Derailing the train had really been the only way to stop it in that location. I looked at the flats stretching off to the west.
Is the country like this all the way on into town?
Pretty much.
We gotta go back the other way then. There's nothing in this direction that'll work.
I turned my horse. We followed the tracks through the pass, such as it was, and headed east. In the distance, I could see a series of shallow ridges. And even they looked a lot more promising than the area where Tate's gang had hit the train. After a while, I pulled my horse to the left, away from the tracks. The other three followed suit.
Where are we going?
Train's coming. We don't want any of the passengers to remember seeing us nosing around out here.
Those trains go by pretty fast. They wouldn't be able to recognize us, would they?
Probably not, but there's no point in taking chances. If you're about to tackle a chore that's risky to start with, you don't want to do anything that might increase the odds against you even more.
You two, sound like you might have done something like this before.
No, it's just common sense, that's all.
Yeah, common sense.
We were a couple hundred yards north of the tracks when the westbound train rumbled past with smoke and cinders spewing from the diamond-shaped stack on the big Baldwin locomotive. If any of the passengers spotted us through the windows, they would think we were just some punchers who had stopped to idly watch the train go by. When the caboose was dwindling down the tracks to the west, I hitched my horse into motion again. We returned to the railroad and continued scouting. A couple of miles further on, we came to a place where the track had been laid in a narrow cut through one of those ridges, leaving banks of rock and red clay on both sides. Those banks were about 15 feet tall, which made them a couple of feet taller than the top of a freight car. The cut was maybe 50 yards long. I cocked my head to the side as I studied it.
I reckon I know what you're thinking, Jim.
Well, I don't.
I pointed to the banks. A man could jump from up there onto the top of a boxcar as it passed by.
Sure he could, if he was loco.
No, you'd have to be careful, but you could do it.
Not me. I'd fall and break my neck, as sure as anything.
He would, but I might be able to do it.
Neither one of you is going to do it. That'll be my job. Once I'm on the train, I can go over the cars and the coal tender up to the engine. Then I'll make the engineer stop where the rest of you boys are waiting for us. After that, just a matter of getting the fella in the express car to open up.
What if the engineer won't stop?
Most of the time when a man's looking down the barrel of a gun, he don't think about anything except keeping the fella on the other end of that gun happy.
I don't want any railroaders killed. My dad was a railroad man. He had a lot of friends on this line. He wouldn't want any of them to be hurt.
I know that. Nobody's gonna get hurt. Not bad, anyway. I might have to clout a fellow over the head or something like that to make him see reason.
As long as nobody's killed.
You got my word on that.
I would do my best to keep that promise, too. I took pride in the fact that nobody had ever been killed in the robberies I'd pulled as a younger man. We spent the rest of the day looking around the area, familiarizing ourselves with the details of the terrain. There was a wash nearby where the rest of the bunch could wade out of sight with the horses while I stopped the train. I also explored both banks of the cut until I found just the right spot to make my jump.
You sure you're still spry enough to do this, Jim?
Of course I am. You're not volunteering to do it, are you? Hell, I'm at least 10 years younger than you are. You never told me how old you really are.
No, I ain't volunteering. And my age is my own business. But I was thinking maybe Santiago ought to handle this part of the chore. I bet he'd be willing.
It don't matter if he's willing or not. This is my job. I've got experience at it.
What if you miss?
Then the train won't stop and the rest of you boys can turn around and go home. We'll have tried to settle the score with the railroad and that'll have to be good enough.
Well, I know how stubborn you are. I don't reckon it'll do any good to argue with you.
Nary a bit. Santiago and the Gallardo brothers met us at the ranch that evening when we got back from our little expedition. All of us sat around the table to go over the plan, except for Randy. He was out in the bunkhouse. I trusted him, but if things went wrong and the sheriff ever questioned him, I wanted him to be able to say that he didn't know what the rest of us were doing. That would be stretching the truth a little, but at least he wouldn't know any of the details.
Vince, you and Bert are going to stay in the wash with the horses.
We're only doing this because of what happened to my father. I ought to run the same risks as the rest of you.
Somebody's got to be responsible for those horses. If they got loose and ran off, we'd be in a mighty bad fix. Not only that, but the two of you worked at the station in town, which means there's a better chance the members of that train crew might recognize you, even with your hats pulled down and bandanas over your faces. If we get in a tight spot and need you, you'll be close by. Otherwise, you stay out of sight.
He's right. They might be able to tell who we are, Vince.
All right. I guess we can do it that way.
Once I've got the train stopped, Gabe, you come on up to the engine and climb into the cab. It'll be your job to keep an eye on the engineer and fireman and make sure they don't cause any trouble.
I can do that.
Santiago, you and your cousins will be responsible for the passenger cars. Just keep everybody quiet and settled down while Enoch and I deal with the express car.
Do we take their valuables?
I looked at Vince, who shook his head. I was willing to let him make that decision.
No, we're not going to rob the passengers. We're only taking what we find in the express car because the railroad will have to make those losses good, and it's the railroad we're trying to hurt. Now, let's talk about schedule. Now, you two work for the railroad. You ought to know when the trains run.
There are two westbound and two eastbound every day. Does it matter?
The train's better if we hit a westbound.
In that case, there's one that comes through about 2 o'clock in the afternoon and another about midnight.
Now, I'm not making that jump in the dark. I gotta see what I'm jumping on.
So we're gonna hold up the train in broad daylight?
Wouldn't be the first holdup that's ever been pulled in broad daylight.
Well, it'll be the first one for me and Vince. But you seem to know what you're doing, Mr. Strickland. You're the boss.
That's right, I am. And that brings up an important point. Once things start popping, I'm in charge out there. I give an order, you do what I tell you, without any hesitation, without any questions. Got that?
They all nodded.
Si, senor.
All right. We'll wait a couple days, just let the plan percolate in our minds. If any of you think of anything else we need to talk about, anything that might go wrong, we need to figure out ahead of time, you come to me right away and tell me about it. You'll all be risking your lives, or at least your freedom. So don't you hesitate to speak up.
Once again, they all nodded in understanding.
You know, this sounds like one of those old-time train robberies people used to read about in dime novels or the Police Gazette. You know, like something that Jesse James would do, or Butch Cassidy.
Jesse James is dead.
For the next 2 days, we went over the plan more than a dozen times, talking it through until everybody knew exactly where he was supposed to be and what he was supposed to do. Enoch and Gabe were cool as they could be about the whole thing, making me more convinced than ever that they had done things like this before. I knew they were pretty convinced that the same was true about me. Santiago, Javier, and Fernando were pretty calm too. I doubted they had ever robbed a train before, but they might have driven some wet cattle across from Mexico. I hadn't asked Santiago how they stocked their ranch, and he hadn't told me. That left Vince and Bert, and those two were nervous as cats, but trying to control it. I was confident that once everything got started, they would be all right. There was no way of knowing that until the time came. Randy was to stay back at the fish hook. If anybody showed up looking for me, or any of the others, he would tell them that we were out on the range, and he didn't know exactly where to find us. I lay stretched out beside a greasewood bush on top of the ridge, with the edge of the bank about 4 feet in front of me. I kept my head down. I didn't think the engineer was likely to spot me on the other side of the greasewood bush, but I wore brown trousers and a tan shirt to help me blend into the ground. A low-crowned brown hat lay beside me. The ground vibrated under me as the train entered the cut. It was easy to tell when the engine passed my position because of the terrible racket shaking.
I counted off a couple of beats before I lifted my head. The engine and the coal tender were past me. The first of a long string of boxcars rattled by. Behind the boxcars were three passenger cars, then the express car, and finally the caboose. I came up on hands and knees, grabbed the hat, jammed it on my head, and tightened the chin strap. Then I pulled up the gray bandana I wore so that it covered the lower half of my face, and made sure the knot was tight on it too. There were still half a dozen boxcars to go when I surged to my feet. Timing my jump, I waited for the next gap between cars to roll past below and in front of me. As it did so, I launched into a short running jump that took me off the edge of the bank and sent me flying out over the cut. An instant later, my feet hit smack dab in the middle of the boxcar roof. I twisted my body as I fell to my knees so that I would stay roughly in the center of the roof. I let myself go all the way to my belly and spread my arms. For a moment, I just lay there, stretched out on top of the boxcar, letting the rhythm of its rocking motion seep up into my body. When I climbed to my feet, I'd adjusted to that motion and it didn't throw me off balance. A quick slap of my hand against my right hip told me the Remington was still in its holster. The strap I'd rigged on it had kept the gun in place. I left the strap fastened for the moment, since I still had some more jumping to do. With their flatter roofs, boxcars were easier to move around than passenger cars. I trotted toward the front of this one and built up some speed so it wasn't too difficult to jump from it to the next car in line. When I landed on it, I didn't go to my knees or even crouch. Just kept moving instead. I didn't waste any time getting to the front of the train. On a long, straight stretch like this, still well out of town, the brakies wouldn't have any reason to climb up where they could spot me. But you never knew when the engineer or fireman might take it into his head to look around. The trickiest part was when I got to the coal tender. I had to climb down and grab the bars on the front of the first boxcar and swing over to the little ledge that ran along the outside of the tender. The engine and the boxcars were out of the cut by then. Although the passenger cars, express car, and caboose were still rolling along between the banks, the ledge was only about 6 inches wide, but that was enough. I reached up, grasped the top of the sidewall, and started edging toward the front. I wanted to get to the engine cab before we passed the wash where the rest of the bunch was waiting. When I reached the front of the tender, it was easy enough to swing around the corner and step into the cab. Just as I did that, the fireman was about to reach through the door with his shovel and dig it into the coal. Instead, when he saw me, he reacted fast and swung the shovel at my head. I ducked and let it go over me. While I was crouched like that, I flicked the strap of the Remington with my thumb and drew the long-barreled revolver. The fireman was going to try for me again with the backswing, but he froze when he saw me angling the gun up toward him.
Drop it!
That was the first warning the engineer had that his cab had been invaded. His head jerked around toward me. I was far enough away from both of them that I could cover them at the same time. Disgustedly, the fireman threw his shovel to the floor and glared at me.
You can't be robbing this train! People don't rob trains anymore!
You're wrong about that, old son. That's exactly what I'm doing.
I nodded to the engineer.
You go ahead and stop the train.
I won't do it!
In fact, he lunged for the throttle to make it go faster. I fired from the hip, sending the bullet between them. It smashed one of the gauges. That was a lucky break, because I'd intended to bust up all the gauges anyway before we rode off. That was one I wouldn't have to break with my gun butt. The shot made the engineer jerk his hand away from the throttle.
I think you were reaching for the brake.
He took hold of the brake and hauled back on it. The train began to slow. I could see the wash now coming up fast. The train shuddered and lurched and came to a halt less than 100 yards past it. The rest of the boys had already started running out of the wash. I heard a shot from somewhere back along the train. Conductors were usually armed. I figured the one belonging to this train had spotted the fellas and realized what was going on. Return fire came from the tall scarecrow I knew was Enoch. I hoped he was aiming high or low, so the promise I'd made to Vince about nobody being killed wouldn't be broken.
This is crazy! We're not carrying anything special!
That's all right. Bound to be something worthwhile in the express car. Now both of you get down on the floor. Move!
They did what I told them, stretching out face down with their arms over their heads. They couldn't move very fast from that position. I leaned out from the cab and glanced in that direction. Gabe was hurrying toward me. I couldn't see Enoch or any of the vaqueros. They were probably inside the train already. Gabe climbed into the cab and stood there for a second, bent over with his hands braced on his thighs.
You all right?
Sure. Just been a while since I've done anything like this.
I waited until he had caught his breath and drawn his gun. Then I nodded to him and swung down from the cab. Enoch had the conductor and a couple of brakemen out of the caboose and was prodding them forward along the tracks. He stopped next to the express car and waited for me to join them. When I got there, I saw that the conductor had his bloody right hand cradled against the chest of his blue uniform jacket. Looked like Enoch had blown a hole through it.
Before you say anything, he ventilated his own hand. Reckon he ain't used to handling a gun.
Well, why would I be? Nobody robs trains these days. This isn't the Wild West anymore.
That's where you're wrong, amigo. The Wild West never dies. It just goes to sleep for a while.
He glared at me and didn't make any reply to that. I went to the door of the express car and hammered on it with the butt of my gun.
Open up in there. We got the conductor and the brakeman out here. If you don't open that door, I'll start shooting them in about a minute.
Oh, open up, Carl. Looks like the Wild Bunch rides again.
But Mr. Newby... Hey,
just do what I told you. I'll take the responsibility for it.
The door rolled back, revealing a young man awkwardly holding a rifle. I didn't give him a chance to figure out where to point it. I reached up, grabbed the barrel, and hauled the rifle out of the car, bringing the messenger with it, thudding down on the gravel at the edge of the tracks.
Son, you're lucky I'm not in a killing mood today.
I handed the rifle to Enoch, who took it with his left hand while keeping everybody covered with a gun in his right.
You don't understand. I'll lose my job over this.
Settle down. There's nothing all that valuable in there.
Some instinct told me he was wrong. I hunkered on my heels next to the messenger and let the Remington's muzzle rest against his cheek.
I got a hunch Mr. Newby here doesn't know what he's talking about, Carl. Is there something in the safe he don't know about?
There damn well better not be. Nobody ships anything on my train without telling me.
Carl, what's in there?
Payroll for one of the mines across the border down in Mexico? It's more than $8,000.
Shit! Damn it!
I grinned, took the gun away, and patted Carl's cheek with my left hand instead.
That's a good boy. Now climb back in there and open the safe.
Don't
bother telling me you can't. I know you can.
He didn't have it in him to be stubborn, not with that gun so close to his face. He got to his feet, and we climbed into the express car. Banks, mining companies, rich ranchers, anybody who has to ship a lot of money. They tried all sorts of things to get the loot safely to where it was going. Sometimes they put on a bunch of extra guards. Sometimes they used decoy shipments. Sometimes they tried to slip it in and out without anybody knowing except a small handful of people. It appeared that was the case here. Pure luck had led us to stop this train today when it was carrying a decent payoff. I had just jumped down from the express car with a pair of canvas money pouches slung over my shoulder when that luck seemed to run out, though. I looked toward town to see an automobile racing alongside the tracks toward us. To me, one of those contraptions looked pretty much like another, but from the way this one weaved back and forth, I had a pretty good hunch that Sheriff Emil Lester was at the wheel. The next second, somebody leaned out to the side from the passenger seat and the varmint started shooting at us with a rifle, probably a Winchester. Sand kicked in the air a good 20 yards from the railroad tracks as the bullet struck there.
Go!
I ran alongside the passenger cars, firing my gun in the air to get the attention of Santiago and his cousins.
Come on!
Gabe stuck his head out from the cab. I waved the hand with the gun in it to let him know to leave the engineer and fireman there and rattle his hocks. The vaqueros appeared on the rear platforms of the cars and leapt to the ground. We all took off in a straggling line toward the wash. I hung back a little, waiting for Gabe to catch up. When he did, I grabbed hold of his arm to help him along. We could only hope that nobody got hit and the sheriff wasn't able to cut us off from the wash.
Vince and Bert must have been keeping a pretty close eye on things from the watch. Without warning, they charged out of it on horseback, each of them leading three of the other horses. They galloped out to meet us. Lester was close, though. The damn car of his was fast, and his deputy's rifle bullets were whizzing too close for comfort around us now as Vince and Bert reached us with the horses. We started trying to climb into the saddles. The sheriff's automobile slewed even more violently to one side. The deputy went flying out the open door on his side. He lost his Winchester as he hit the ground. Steam boiled out from the front of the car. Somebody up on the ridge was shooting at Lester's vehicle, I realized, and doing a damn fine job of it, too. The automobile shuddered to a halt. By that time, I was in the saddle, and a quick glance told me the others were, too. I waved a hand toward the wash, not wanting to yell because Lester had heard my voice too often and might recognize it. The others were watching me, though, and followed orders. We all galloped in an angle away from the railroad tracks. I looked back and saw Lester hopping out from the car. He pointed a handgun at us and squeezed off a few rounds, but we were already out of effective range. I didn't know for sure who had been up on that ridge helping us out, but I had a pretty good idea. Sure enough, when we emerged from the wash a little later, I spotted a rider on a familiar horse galloping on a course that would intersect ours. I pointed him out, and we veered toward him to meet him quicker. By now, we had all pulled our bandana masks down. The hombre who had come to our aid wasn't wearing one. We came up to him and reined in.
Randy!
Nobody's hurt?
Nope. And you deserve some of the credit for that, son. Stopping the sheriff in the tracks the way you did.
I thought you weren't going to be part of this.
That's what I thought, too. But the longer I sat there at the ranch, the more it bothered me that I hadn't come with you. We're all supposed to be partners. That's what riding for the brand is all about, isn't it?
All for one and one for all. Like in a book I read once.
Anyway, when I couldn't stand it anymore, I decided to come after you and keep an eye on you, just in case you needed help.
I'm glad you did. But how'd you know where to find us? We didn't let you in on the details of the plan.
Oh, I eavesdropped outside the window a couple times when y'all were talking. It wasn't hard.
I didn't think you were that sneaky. Good thing for us you were, though. We might have gotten away from Sheriff Lester anyway, but when you pitched in like that, you made sure of it.
How'd that lawman know to come racing out there from town?
I don't know. Maybe we can figure that out later. Right now, let's just get back to the ranch before somebody happens to come along looking for us and wonders where we all are. We set off for the fish hook again, not galloping now, but keeping the horses moving at a ground-eaten lope. Kept an eye on our back trail, watching for any signs of pursuit. I didn't think Lester would get that automobile going again without some major repair work on it. But in this business, it never hurts to expect the unexpected. I didn't see anyone following us, and that was the way I liked it.
You really didn't know about that payroll being in the express car, did you, Jim?
Payroll? What's this about a payroll?
$8,000 that was bound for a mine below the border. Conductor didn't even know it was on board. But I reckon you did, Jim.
You reckon wrong. You gotta have some luck in this business, and that's what this was.
$8,000? Really?
Well, I haven't counted it yet, but that's how much the express messenger claimed there was. And once he admitted it was there, I don't see why he'd have any reason to lie about the amount.
$8,000? That's almost $900 for each of us.
No, amigo. My cousins and I, we plan to take only half of the share coming to us. The other half goes to your madre.
You can't do that. It's not fair to you after all the risks you ran.
We all ran those risks, son. We all plan on splitting the money with you and your ma.
There's no point in arguing. We all talked about it when you weren't around, and that's what we decided to do. We probably wouldn't have done this if the railroad hadn't cheated your ma. And it was so much fun, it was sure enough worth it.
Getting shot at was fun?
There's nothing like the sound of a bullet going past your head to make you feel alive.
When we get back to the ranch, we'll divvy up the money. You'll need to take the part that goes to you and your ma into town and give it to her. And she can't put it in the bank, though. At least not right away and not all at once. That would make folks too curious about where she got it. I'll tell her to wait a little bit and then deposit some. She could say that relatives back east sent it to her or some such.
I understand. She's doing some work as a seamstress, too. She can use some of the money and claim she earned it that way.
There you go. Now you're thinking, son.
I'll leave all of my part with her. I don't need it. With that much money, she might be all right from now on.
So we're not gonna do this again?
You mean nobody has to risk their lives again?
We'll see. You can't ever tell what might come up. Night was falling as we rode in.
If one of you boys will take care of my horse, I'll get some coffee boiling and rustle us up some grub.
I'll tend to your horse, Gabe.
Gabe headed for the cook shack while the rest of us unsaddled and rubbed down our mounts and made sure they had plenty of water and grain. The horses had done gallant service today, and they deserved some rest and good treatment. I carried the money pouches in and set them on the table. An air of eagerness hung over the room, and I knew the boys wanted to gaze on those greenbacks. It wouldn't be right to do it without Gabe, however, so we waited until he brought in the coffee.
Stew will be ready in a little while. Let's go ahead and have a look at that dinero.
I unfastened the strap on one of those pouches. Banded bundles of cash fell onto the table as I turned the pouch upside down. The other pouch held more of the same. The men standing around the table stared avidly for a moment at the scattered loot. Then Bert reached out and started stacking the bundles into neat piles. He liked things orderly and organized.
I've been thinking about what you said a while back, Bert, about how this robbery was something like Jesse James or Butch Cassidy would pull.
Yes, sir. I didn't mean any offense by that.
Well, none taken, son. In fact, I'm sort of honored by the comparison to Jesse James.
But not by the one to Butch Cassidy?
Well, I can't rightly be honored to be compared to Butch Cassidy. You see, I can't be compared to him because I am him.
Who?
Butch. You see, boys, I am Butch Cassidy.
See, I told you I'm fond of dramatic moments. That there bold declaration sure as hell was one of those moments. It caused the three youngsters to stare at me in shock, and even the normally stolid vaquero seemed surprised. Only Enoch and Gabe didn't look at me like I'd totally lost my mind.
That's not possible. Butch Cassidy must be dead by now. He dropped out of sight a long time ago.
Yeah, I read about him in a magazine I found in the train station. I think it said he was hanged somewhere.
Would that have been an issue of the Police Gazette, Bert? Yeah. Well, hate to tell you this, son, but everything they print in that rag ain't always the truth. Sometimes it's nowhere even close.
I don't believe it either. No offense, Mr. Strickland, but I'm not sure Butch Cassidy was even real.
Now, you ought to know better than that, Vince. I'm as real as can be. I'm standing right in front of you, ain't I?
I still don't.
You sound like a bunch of chickens squabbling in a farmyard. Of course Butch Cassidy's real. I seen him with my own eyes years ago.
Is that true? We've met.
Not exactly. But we were in the same livery stable one afternoon in Winnemucca almost 15 years ago. You rode in on a big white horse with a couple other fellas.
I remember that horse. Fast as greased lightning he was.
Nobody around there knew who you were then. But when the bank was robbed a couple of days later, they all figured it out, sure enough. You were having a look around the town before you and the rest of the wild bunch hit the bank, weren't you?
Well, I always like to know what we'd be getting into. So you saw me one time in a livery stable and never forgot it.
I'd already done considerable hell-raising myself by that time. Fact of the matter is, I wouldn't have minded riding with you boys back then. But no, I didn't recognize you right away when you came up to us in the saloon in Largo. I just knew you looked a mite familiar. Didn't think nothing of that since I've been a heap of places and seen a heap of people. But when you started talking about robbing a train that day in Winnemucca, come back to me.
And I knew you'd been an owl hoot even if you was trying to go straight now. You'd get that faraway look in your eyes, like you could feel the wild, lonesome trails calling to you.
Why, Gabe, that was almost poetical.
So the two of you believe him? You think he's really Butch Cassidy?
Why shouldn't we believe him?
Because Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid are dead.
Bring back bad memories, Jim? Sorry, that's what I'm used to calling you.
Jim's fine. I've been using it for a while. Never since last December when I came up on a poor fellow who'd been gut shot. I'll tell you boys the whole story. But Gabe, you got a stew simmering and need to tend to it. How about we wait until after supper for me to explain everything?
Oh, that's not fair. You can't just tell us that you're Butch Cassidy and expect us to sit around and wait for the story.
I'll talk better on a full stomach.
We can wait. Butch Cassidy's been dead for a long time. He can stay dead for a little while longer.
You can count up the money while I'm gone. I trust you to divvy it up right.
While Gabe went to check on the stew, that's what we did. Those pouches had $8,260 in them. That was $920 apiece, minus a couple dollars on each share. For simplicity's sake, the eight of us, not counting Vince, each kicked in $450, making a kitty of $3,600. With Vince's share put in, that made a little more than $4,500 to give his ma.
She's liable to guess where it came from and refuse to take it. She's always prided herself on being an honest woman.
After what the railroad did to your pa and then to her, she's liable to decide she's got it coming, even if she does figure out where you got it. It's only fair.
We'll have to wait and see.
She won't turn us in, will she?
Damn it, Randy! If we weren't friends, I might have to take a poke at you for that. My ma would never do such a thing.
I hoped he was right about that. But it was a chance we had to take.